Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Thank you for coming back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Dan Kaplan and Joe Keegan of the PLL. We got a fox in the hen house, Cap.
There we go. Our inside source.
I guess I'm the inside source. Terry has the inside scoop on Fate of a Sport. Put out the review slash report this morning, which I haven't seen. So maybe debatable who's the inside source.
Oh, well, wow.
Yeah.
Hey, maybe you're the fox in the hen hole, Terry.
I mean, if that's the case, then I'm going to take it as a compliment. But yeah, Joe, thanks for joining us. You've been an incredible resource to the Inside Lacrosse staff since taking on the role that you have with PLL. Tell the people what you do.
That's a good question. Do a lot of things, mostly on the marketing team. On our PR team, in email marketing, and the most exciting stuff that's probably what we talk about the most, that I know Dan loves, is the advanced stats side. And that's stuff that Jake Watson and I started tracking back in 2015 for MLL, basically just tagging variables to every single shot and getting this information. Was it assisted? Was it unassisted? Just trying to go a little deeper than the box scores traditionally do.
We will get to that if we have time. I don't know if we're going to have time. We have a lot going on. We have a couple balls that are floating up in the air in terms of guests, so we're going to see how it goes. But, of course, it is the PLL happy hour, so we got to start. What are you guys drinking? No Athletic Brewing Company. Love Athletic Brewing Company, but, you know, not this late on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
So, it is late on a Thursday night. I have
What is that? Is that the Ride Wave? What did that say?
Free Wave. I put it in a mug, though, so that I didn't know that the can was going to get exposed, because I know, I figured you guys would want me to have something with a little juice in it. But we got Homewood tomorrow. I got to wake up early. I got stuff to do. I like feeling fresh in the morning.
Yeah, I don't fault you for that. It is you got chirped about it like a week ago or 2 weeks ago in terms of basically the very common question of what is the point of non-alcoholic beer. And I thought your answer was exactly right. Like, I like the taste of it, but I also don't like feeling hungover. So that's the pitch for Athletic Brewing Company.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that simple. It's not really an ad, just like genuine, like I to each their own. And yeah, I got chirped on it a couple of weeks ago when RJ posted the video, but I get chirped on it, I think, every single time I post something by Coolin. He's a college kid.
He's just not athletic enough is what it comes down to. Yeah, if it were an Athletic Brewing Company, he probably would be all about it.
Yeah.
I don't know that the college guys are exactly their target demographic. I'm not sure that they need to stress too much if they're not roping him in.
Yeah.
Cap, what do you got?
I wasn't drinking these in college.
Yeah, I'm red cupping it. I'm on the mixer game just to keep you guys on a loop. I red cupped it the other day, and Kevin Brown's face when I pulled out the red cup, like, it was almost as if he didn't even realize that people like older than 25 are allowed to like own them. So I decided to keep it rolling. But we got a little mixed drink in there. I'm currently on a little bit of a whiskey ginger run. So got a little mixed drink in there to kind of get me through after a long day.
I've got a Black Flag Brewing Company flagship IPA. Black Flag is Columbia, Maryland based. And to your point, Joe, with PLL at Homewood Field, it felt like staying local was the way that we were going to go. So, all right. Well, it's good to know that we're all refreshed.
Do we have a Maryland flag on the can?
No, it's like a skull with a it's kind of a cool label.
Nice.
Yeah, so no, I applaud them for resisting the temptation slash urge to incorporate the Maryland flag. But let's dive into some of the things, because like I said, we've got a lot to get to, and I want to get to our first guest as quickly as we can. But we're we're 30% of the way through the regular season, and what's crazy is that you can make a strong argument that for some teams the season hasn't started yet, and that on the other hand you can make an argument that it's time to revisit some of the preseason predictions. So a third of the way into the year, Joe Keegan, I'm going to put you on the hot seat first. Who is your rookie of the year?
My rookie of the year, third of the way through, is Brendan Nicktern. I think that the role that he's played, which is, it's tough because he's playing on the same line as the first overall pick, and Wisnowskis has been great. But the role that Nicktern's playing, like as the quarterback, and I threw out a compliment about Nicktern on Twitter and got some replies like, let's wait until he plays against Matt Dunn. Sure, we'll have the conversation then once he's played Matt Dunn. But to this point, Brendan Nicktern has just been awesome, rock solid. Like that Chrome team has just like some really unique weapons, right? Whether it's like Justin Anderson getting downhill, Wisnowskis on one wing, Malloy on the other wing. I think that without Nicktern, like if Nicktern hadn't fallen to them in the second round, I'm not sure that this offense is clicking the way that they are, despite all those pieces. I think he's like the last puzzle piece that this offense needed after they added Wisnowskis.
Dan Kaplan, who's your rookie of the year?
I have another pick that I think that is going to be a little bit eye-opening, but I'm taking Matt Moore, and this is kind of on like a projection basis, but I think that as he's kind of settling into the role that he is, I just feel like he's going to be the piece that kind of makes the Archers go down the line, especially if they can keep rolling him out against short sticks. And like the more that he gets comfortable and the more that people are used to him and moving off ball accordingly, like I could see him kind of starting to turn the corner down the stretch, and he's got 2-point range. He can feed it. He can shoot it. He's 2-handed, you know, like I think there's a lot that is going for him. And I think my original pick at the start of the season was Chris Gray, which I still am somewhat comfortable with. So I'm very comfortable admitting that picking someone else right now is a little bit of a hedge to give me two people that I can come back and say that I was right if it's either one of them. But that's kind of where my head is. I really like Chris Gray. And then Joe already mentioned it, but the advanced shooting stats that we have access to, like I think they kind of favor him. And again, I just think that the more he settles in, that could be a really good thing to watch down the line.
So don't let me forget to bring up the idea of projection versus current status when we talk about MVP. But before we get there, Joe, is JT Giles Harris eligible for Rookie of the Year because he didn't play last season?
No, he wouldn't be. That would be a phenomenal pick if he were. But he's in the same boat as Brad Smith in 2020. And Brad Smith dominated in 2020, even though it was a 2019 pick. So yeah, you got to go to your backup.
All right. So I think it's pretty clear that I need to choose either Chris Gray or Logan Wisnowskis. Obviously, you guys have talked about the merits that each of them bring to the table. They both have 11 points through three games. Wisnowskis has 9 goals and 2 assists. Gray has 5 goals, 4 assists, and a 2-pointer. It's a tough call. I think for me, it starts from the standpoint of like who's carrying, starts and ends. Who's carrying a bigger load? Like whose burden is heavier? And, you know, the simple fact is, I think that the combination of Dylan Malloy and Brendan Nicktern are playing marginally, like the slightest margin better than Jeff Teat and Eric Law. And that's why right now I'm going to give the nod to Chris Gray. And, you know, it's funny because I'm a contrarian. And so I'm predisposed to pick against, I mean, obviously in this case, you essentially have two number one picks, right? You have the guy that was the consensus number one pick before the draft. And then you have the guy that was actually taken number one. And, you know, I also like, you know, the contrarian in me will also kind of like bristle at the, just the corner t-shirts, but my hater nature is not going to overcome the fact that he's been awesome. So I'm going to go with Chris Gray through three games as my MVP. As my rookie of the year. As I mentioned, MVP is next. Let's stick with the same order because it worked really well. Joe Keegan, who's your MVP through three games?
So before we get into the current current prediction versus projections. My MVP pick would be Jeff Teague. I picked him at the beginning of the season, and I'll still pick him, even though, like, if the season ended today, would he win it? Probably not. They're 2-1. There's a couple undefeated teams that, you know, probably if you look through the Whipsnakes or Chrome, like, it's probably one of the guys that we just talked about, as crazy as it is, but a few games in. The MVP is probably, like, JT Giles-Harris or, like, a guy on the Chrome attack. But, yeah, I would pick Jeff Teague. I think that this offense, as good as it is, goes as he goes, and he admitted as much after the game against the Whipsnakes, for them to be the best team that they can be, which if they can accomplish that in September, it would be the best team in the league, in my opinion. For them to achieve that, Jeff Teague needs to be an MVP guy, and I would bet on that.
Cap, I'm going to jump the line on you here because I'm going to say the same thing. Like, and this is what I was talking about with projection versus current status. I picked him before the season. I mean, I can criticize you for moving off of your otherwise pretty healthy early, you know, preseason prediction for rookie of the year. I agree with you, Joe. I don't think if the season ended now, he would win. I do think Tram Schreiber's case is really interesting. I do think that, you know, further examination of Will Manny, who's leading league in scoring with 17 points, but put up 8 points in one of those games, right, is an interesting consideration as well. And then obviously that's only isolated to the offensive end of the field. I mean, do Trevor Baptiste and Jack and Cannon warrant mention at this point? And I would argue that at the very least they do warrant mention. But, you know, there's nothing that I've seen from Jeff Teague that leads me to believe that 7 games from now, he's not going to be the most deserving MVP candidate. Dan, who you got?
All right, so this will form well into my title pick, which I'm going to take Matt Dunn of the Whipsnakes Lacrosse Club. You guys both picked offensive guys, and I kind of decided that as soon as you cut the line that I was going to go defensive-minded with it. But again, I think that he's one of the guys that brings the identity to the Whipsnakes, like a winning tradition and just like a full-on like leadership role on top of guarding the other team's best players and organizing the defense and like all the communication he has. If he scores a 2-pointer like at all during the season, like his case is going to bump tenfold because like his portfolio and like it'll go viral. So like everybody will be like eyes on him, but otherwise like he's just going to kind of quietly lead the defense and like own up on his matchups. And I'm struggling right now to think that the Whipsnakes aren't at least going to be in the championship.
Wow. All right. Well, that's a nice segue into the last part of this segment, which is who's your champion pick? You know, 3 games in, Joe Keegan, who are you going with?
I'm going to go with the Archers. I think last year, yeah, I think there are so many teams. I mean, 2 minutes ago, I said that Atlas could win if Jeff Teague's the MVP. Dan's case for the Whipsnakes is a strong one that I'm sure we're going to hear in a minute, but I'll go with the Archers. They were the most efficient offense in the league last year, most efficient defense. Their struggles have just been at the stripe. Frankie Labetti was good enough for them to put up 20 last weekend without Grant Amant. I think that if Justin Inacio is like a 40-45% guy for this team, that's really all they need. And as good as they were on both ends of the field last year, they might be even better, right? And they might be better in transition with Ogavin and Trainer playing like a two-way role. And Matt Moore just giving them an option that they didn't have against Chaos down the stretch in the playoffs the last 2 years. Somebody who can just win a matchup when nobody's going to slide. Just gives them – they kind of addressed everything that they needed to address. So I would say the Archers.
Cap, who you got?
All right. So, yeah, like I said, I'm taking the Whipsnakes. And if you've listened to previous episodes on here, it shouldn't totally surprise you that one of the points that I'm going to bring up is coaching. Like, I think that they're the best coach team in the PLL. I think they play with the most, like, the heaviest chip on their shoulder. Maybe outside of the Chaos that like it's so much is driven from Coach Towers and like just this like will to win and like anti like fans that are the 3.4% the whole thing that went against them and all that. But I really like the Whipsnakes. They're specialists. Like I don't think that even on their worst days, they're not going to lose a game for you. And even if Burnlor is playing terrible, like, they have an option there. Nardella's never going to be like a guy that just can't bring it to the point where he loses a game for you. But if either one of them in either spot as the specialist get hot, they can absolutely win you a game or two. You know, I really like that, what they have there in the specialist spots and coaching, and then just like the winning tradition and chip on their shoulder and the way they play. I think it's probably a safe bet, honestly.
Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, I'm going a different direction because I feel like I need to. Partly because, Dan, you picked the most logical team. And Joe, you picked a very good team that I think our impending guest is going to very much appreciate. But so I am like, you know, again, I've already identified myself as a contrarian in this podcast, so I don't want to beat that drum too hard. But, you know, the whole notion of like picking on the basis of vibes, it's not my scene, right? Except when it comes to pro field lacrosse champions, because to me, the line of demarcation between the quality standards between these teams is too narrow. I don't think you can pick the best team and expect to win. You have to try to identify that otherwise very difficult to quantify or specify or put your finger on aspect of what they've got going and use that as the reason. And so, you know, I'm definitely like, I don't want to say romanticizing, but I guess what I would say is that I would have expected last season to be a little bit more kumbaya for the Chrome than it was, on the basis of Tim Sudan and what he brings to the table being a professional coach. And it just feels like through 30% of the season so far this year, they've got it dialed in. And I don't know if it was a function of like addition by subtraction or if it was a function of the guys they actually added being their people. But I'm going to go with Chrome because, again, like, these teams are too even. They're too equivalent in order to say, like, I think this team's going to win because they're better. No team is enough better to make that your reason for picking them, in my opinion. So as a result, it's just got to be something else. And why don't we take this opportunity to introduce our either first or only guest of the night, depending on how the night goes. Connor DeSimone, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you guys well. Thanks for having me.
It's great to see you. How's everything been going?
It's been good. It's been a crazy few weeks, but I'm excited to get out to Homewood this weekend. It should be a nice little homecoming back in Baltimore. Lucky for me, I still have my house, and I still am leasing my apartment out in Baltimore, so I've got a nice little place to stay. I don't need to worry about too much, but it should be a smooth ride down tomorrow.
Have you been in Baltimore, or have you been in Long Island the last 3 weeks?
I've been in Long Island the last few weeks, just spending time with my family and kind of moving back in and focusing on work coming up. But I know a bunch of my buddies and guys I lived with are out in Baltimore right now, so it should be a fun time this weekend seeing them.
No doubt. I want to give Dan and Joe an opportunity to ask these questions, but I'll take the first swing. So, you know, obviously coming off of a week in which it must have been difficult to manage not knowing essentially whether Grant was going to play and what your role was going to be. So, I mean, obviously, you know, the week-to-week nature of this league is very real, and you've experienced that over the course of the first three games of the season. What has it been like, and specifically, how did you manage the uncertainty of knowing whether you were going to play and what your role was going to be, you know, for the Archers in week three?
Yeah, I think it was the mentality of just kind of always being ready and, you know, always having that stick in my hand and ready for anything that was kind of thrown at me. So Coach Bates and the older guys on the team have been great, just kind of welcoming me and introducing me to the system and making sure that I was kind of caught up with all the terminology and where their head was at with this week and what plays were running, and kind of just speeding me up to whatever our game plan was this week, regardless of if I was going to kind of be out there for Grant or not. So I think that mentality of just making sure that I was always ready, because you never know what's really going to happen. You know, I went into Friday practice last week. Grant was feeling good, and then there was a little bit of soreness in his hamstring, and it was kind of a last minute call. But luckily for me, it was in Long Island, and it was not too far of a drive away. So I was fortunate enough to get the opportunity to play, and we had a good week. So hopefully we can kind of keep that momentum rolling and keep the boys on top.
Playing with Marcus and Will, I know, like, as soon as Grant was drafted, they started, you know, sending film clips like, I'm going to be here, throw it here to Grant. I know they hold weekly film sessions. What's it like watching the games with them, and what's some of the stuff that, like, they're looking for and, like, throughout the week you guys are zeroing in on as an offense?
Yeah, you know, they've got great chemistry, you know, and they're so welcoming, and the way that they look at the game is very unique. You know, I don't know if I've played with as good of off-ball players as they are ever before. So the way that they see seams and how they're looking at where the defense is sliding from, where the two slide is, where I can be, where I should be, is definitely something unique and something that I've been very appreciative of over the last few weeks. You know, they're great kind of pulling me aside and demanding of where I should be in the offense, you know, because we have a very talented offense and we definitely want to put as many goals on the board as possible. So really just admirable of the leadership that they've shown over the last few weeks, kind of just even bringing me in and getting me up to speed with how fast this shot clock is and how fast and talented everyone is in the league.
Cool. So I'll pick up here. Last week we had Asher Nolting on, and obviously, like, the first question we asked him was, like, what's it like playing with Lyle Thompson? You obviously have the same kind of thing going with Tom Shriver. What's it like playing with him? Like, is it like, does he just do the most incredible stuff in practice that you've ever seen? Like,
yeah, he's definitely the best player that I've seen and arguably the best player in the world right now. You know, some of the things that he can do in practice, just even fooling around with the stick when we're shooting on the goalies, is I can't even imagine even thinking about that. And he's pulling it off, like, in real life reps against our defense. And I'm just like, how is this going to a guy's ear and going in the back of the net? You know, how is he throwing these underhand passes from wing to wing? That's literally hitting Will on the stick for a quick stick through six skip lanes and some really crazy stuff. And it comes really easy to him. And he's a great player and he's even a better teammate. You know, he's always looking for that one more pass, always looking to kind of set everyone else up and make sure that everyone else is having success over himself. And I think that's one of the best things that I've kind of realized is how selfless he is as a leader. And I think it's definitely a big reason why we've had success so far.
Connor, on the broadcast last week, and really on kind of every broadcast over the course of the season, the teams have talked about the value of versatility, right? Particularly for offensive players, the ability to have played or the experience of having played attack and midfield and the notion of positionless lacrosse. So it's kind of a two-parter. The first part is, what role are you being asked to fill by your staff? And then the second part is, how important is your personal versatility for your ability to get on the field?
So I think from the staff and from the other guys, you know, it's not about my role. It's more about the team and how the offense is running. So kind of whatever is thrown at me that week and how we want to attack that game plan and the other team is kind of what I'm willing to do and what I'm going to do going forward. And I think kind of to answer the second part of your question, I think the reason why it's come as easy as it has so far is obviously because of my teammates, but because of that ability to play both positions. You know, my career is very positionless, and it's been an absolute roller coaster between midfield to attack, back to midi to attack, and then ended my career at midfield. So the way that our offense kind of runs, it is as positionless as possible, and you will find yourself all over the field. And I think that whatever was thrown at me that week, whether it means I'm running on the wing a little bit more, I'm crashing the back pipe, or I'm just a swing guy at X, I'm kind of up for it. And my experience at Hopkins and in high school has really prepared me for that transition of positionless lacrosse.
So one of the things that jumps out to me is that, I don't know, this is going to sound weird. I don't really even want to say it, but I think you're going to understand what I'm getting at. Like, there are very few players who were more tailor-made to be professional lacrosse players than you from your pedigree, right? Like, based on your dad's experience with the Lizards, how closely you've been attached to the game for the last 15 years, and then obviously by virtue of, you know, all the accolades that you received as a high school and college player. This is like this is the part that's like the weird part of the question, but like, what does it feel like to kind of satisfy that dream?
That is a little bit awkward of a question, but I would say it's not very much satisfied. You know, I obviously have personal goals and team goals that and expectations that ideally that I would like to live up to and want to strive for. And I think that's something that's motivated me my entire life and kind of allowed me to play the game. And it's
so getting there is not the goal. The goal is to perform when you're there.
Absolutely. It is about performance, but it's also about, you know, getting there is the fun part of the whole thing. And, you know, that experience and all the ups and downs that have come with my career has been fun to me and exciting, like the work and all of the friendships and things that I've gone through is something that I could look back on and be proud of. But I, like I said, I think the journey has been more fun. You know, it's been a roller coaster, and I've met a bunch of great guys and a ton of great mentors on the way that have kind of molded me into the player and person that I am. You know, I've had a ton of coaches and a lot of best friends over the last however many years. So I'm thankful and appreciative for everyone on this journey.
That is an awesome answer. And I'm going to immediately shift you away from something so serious to kind of bail you out and go back to the lacrosse field. So I guess kind of my, this may be a weird question. I'm not exactly sure how to word it. So bear with me here as I go through it. But I guess my biggest question is, like, I feel like every time we get a look at it and it goes to a huddle, like, it's so much of like a team thing, like a team conversation when you guys are talking in the PLL versus like when you're in college and it's so much more coach driven. What's that kind of transition been like? And like, do you feel like you have a voice in the huddle? And like, what, I'm just curious kind of how that dynamic totally works out.
Honestly, it's been awesome. And it's been eye opening. You know, there's, you go out on the field and there's six coaches on the field. It seems like, you know, everyone has their experience and their unique perception of lacrosse. So I think the best thing is that how open everyone is to opinions and how open and willing they are to kind of listen to what you've been through, how you guys played it in the past and any really advice. You know, I feel comfortable enough with those guys. And like I said, they're so welcoming to kind of express how I feel, what makes me comfortable, how things work for me, just as much as I honestly love hearing the way that they look at the game because it's so unique and it's something that I've never experienced before. So to answer those questions, the huddles are awesome. You know, I learn so much going in every single huddle, just picking their brain. And I love talking and shooting the lacrosse talk after the game about, you know, their experiences and how it feels for, you know, Tom, Will, Marcus, Scott being 10-year guys in the league and how different things were when the MLL was around and how it is now. And even like little small travel stuff where I'm always just shooting their brain, like, is this how it always is? And oh, no, it's changed a lot. You came in at the right time, but it's really great hearing those guys and they respect and appreciate my opinion just as much as I do theirs.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I have an even less serious question than Dan's. We hear Dominique Alexander talking nonstop. I don't know if that's just RJ's editing or is he actually like that in practice? Does anybody else on the defense compare to him?
He definitely has the loudest voice at practice. You know, he's always bringing the smack and the trash talk and bringing it around to the rookies. And a little joke that him and I have is he tries to force me to hold Tom accountable to some things. And I'm like, I'm not telling Tom anything what to do. You know, Tom's the best player in the world right now. I'm gonna sit here on the sideline and just watch him do his thing. And Dominique's like, come on, get your boy, make sure he's doing this and this. I'm like, Dominique, you don't know enough about offense to tell me to tell Tom to do his thing. No, he's a great teammate and he's awesome to have around and he definitely lightens the mood. And you know, you could be having a tough practice and Dominique will pull you under his wing and just make sure that everything's all right and tell you that it happens to everyone. So he's definitely a character and I'm happy he's my teammate for sure.
So to continue along with like the effort to get lighter and lighter as we go. So my opinion of like how you graduate from college to pro lacrosse is if you're an offensive player, it's by being more skilled. And if you're a defensive player, it's by being a bigger goon. And so my question is, how glad are you that you're not going to take a game check from Graham Hossack?
A game check I'm very, very, very thankful for, but I cannot say that I have not taken one in practice. I know I had a.
And how does a practice check compare to a
nothing.
Game check?
I can't even imagine.
All right, good. That's what I was going to say. If he's like knocking guys out of games because yeah. of just getting over aggressive on a Friday night before a Saturday game, like you got to, I mean, come on, Canuck, get out of here.
It was funny. The first week of training camp, I was getting everyone's names down and I couldn't really pick up on faces. I'm terrible with names and I couldn't figure out who Graham was on the field. And then I roll back to my right hand and Graham comes sliding to me and he just jams me at the hip. And I fell from like the 2-point line all the way to the midline, like a 15 yard. It looked like a meme. It was awful. And I forget after, I think Grant comes up to me. He's like, yeah, when Graham's running at you, you pass the ball forward. And like, I'm well aware. I will never forget Graham's face again.
I have a question going off the 2-point line. Yeah. We've seen him run out of the box the past couple games. I feel like it's there, but we just haven't seen it in a game. Does Matt Moore have 2-point range?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I don't think Matt Moore knows he's got 2-point range, but he definitely does. You know, he's one of the faster guys on the team and he runs so fast and he just shoots so hard. He doesn't even know his own strength yet, but he's a great player and he's going to put in a ton more goals this year. I guarantee it.
I got called out for that because I tweeted about like basically the best like distance shooters in college during the season. And somebody was like, you don't know that he does it because he only ever shoots from mid range in college. But Matt Moore is like one of the best 14 and out yard type shooters. So yeah, we just
he's
have to
a
see
ridiculous
it.
Athlete. And when you get his feet moving, it's really hard to keep up with him.
So I'm curious how you kind of feel like once Grant comes back and he obviously he's going to take that, you know, attack spot back, but kind of curious how you feel like meshing back in and like what that transition is going to be like. And obviously he's a guy that comes in and gives you such an element feeding and, you know, knowing, having that chemistry and all that type of stuff. It's one guy that can come in and kind of totally change everything with just his presence. And just curious how you think that transition will go down.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like how it was kind of more towards training camp, obviously with a lot of things cleaned up. You know, Grant is such a great quarterback at X and so commanding of the offense. And like I was saying before, this offense is as positionless as possible. You know, so whether it be the low wings, mid wings, high wings, like a lot of us have been in those situations before. And it's not unfamiliar to anyone, especially myself. So Grant does his stuff behind the net and he's a great feeder and has great vision and puts guys on skates and everyone else will just fill one of those other five spots that we've all been familiar with and have been grinding out those 2 weeks in training camp and playing those spots.
In other words, you think it'll be pretty smooth?
Yeah. I mean,
just like his game.
Grant.
I kind of wanted to dive into this when we were talking earlier, but I'm glad Connor's on now. Like philosophically, I guess like the knock on this offense last year was that there are too many off ball guys, and you spoke to how great Will and Marcus are off ball. But like the recipe to beat this offense before was to short stick those guys, force them to dodge, not slide to Tom. Like obviously that frustrates Tom because Tom wants to be a feeder. Like philosophically, we've seen obviously no offense is like the extreme. I guess it's like the old Jerry Burns saying, like, give me six off-ball defenders versus six guys who can cover and we'll be okay. No offense is that extreme, but I guess like the Redwoods would be the opposite end of the spectrum. And you guys are kind of like six off-ball guys. So like, how do you make that work? And like, how do you make that work against the defenses that test you like last week against Chaos?
I think that our best strength is how well we work together. You know, whether you don't have to beat your guy and they put absolutely no pressure on you to be your guy, but it is our ball movement and it is how well we set picks, how intentional we are and how, I guess, clean that we are with our offensive schemes is kind of what separates us. You know, everyone goes out there, we're all on the same page. We know where we like to dodge from, who we're going with, if we should set a pick, if we should slip it, if we should work off ball here. And I think our communication on the field with each other is as much as you do want to scout us, it does make us unscoutable how many different variations you can throw at another defense, you know, and I always go back to that positionless across, like you can put any of our six guys in any spot And as long as we communicate with each other, we can guarantee that our execution is going to be a little bit more clean than what the defense kind of has planned and drawn up.
Along those lines, like one of the things that I'm interested in is, and it kind of feels like you really haven't had a drought yet. Like, I know that you lost by a goal in your first game, but it was your first game and, you know, you've put up 17 and 20 since then. But one of the things that Joe's question sparked in my mind is I compare ball movement oriented offenses in lacrosse to 3-point shooting offenses in basketball. And the reason I do is because when it goes, sometimes it goes without explanation and the ability to get it back is very difficult. So whereas, like, you know, if you're just going to ISO and ISO and ISO, like, all it takes is, like, you know, somebody's going to beat their guy eventually and somebody's going to miss a slide. So I guess I'm asking you a question that you can't really answer, but what I am interested in is, like, what, how do you envision this team handling adversity?
And I think it's been our theme kind of all year so far, you know, from training camp to now, is kind of just leaning on each other and really trusting each other and knowing each other. You know, a big thing is for us is let's get everyone touches. Let's all be intentional with what we're doing. Let's all be on the same page. And if there's not too much pressure on anyone. You know, we trust each other. We have a very strong connection and we're really starting to come together and understand what each person likes, doesn't like, and our film breakdowns have been great and very intentional and figuring ourselves out and our identity and who we want to be going forward. So I guess for that adversity question, it is kind of leaning, not looking outward, but kind of looking inward at, you know, the seven offensive guys in the huddle every week and, you know, brainstorming, having those 6-7 coaches come together all in that huddle and think, what can we do to kind of counter this or combat something that's not going well? Because there is so much variation in our offense. It is almost unscoutable with how versatile each player is.
So I'm going to pick up right there and kind of want to dive in on your guys' film breakdowns that you mentioned and scout. Curious how much, like, when you guys meet, and are you guys looking back at your previous film? Are you guys looking at your opponents, trying to get a gauge for how you want to attack them? Like, what do those look like?
So I think Trey LeClaire said a little quote that said it best, that we all really enjoyed, but it was finding the best version of ourselves. You know, so a lot of it has to do with us, what we can do, what we're kind of looking for, and how we can execute more cleanly. Because that offense, if we feel really comfortable if the ball's in our stick. You know, if all 6 guys are on the same page, we feel very, very comfortable in our 6-on-6 offense, knowing that we can get a great shot and a great opportunity. We just got to kind of pick and choose our battles, not pick the first one, but pick the best one.
Going off that, in those film sessions, I heard after each week, before you guys jump on, you have to submit, like, your comments on every goal from the previous week. Like, what are the examples? Like, what are guys tossing out for those comments?
A lot of it's like kind of what we did, how we got to the goal setup, and some archer lacrosse, we're calling it, is some of the plays that maybe aren't on the stat sheet, but, you know, those hockey assists, those off ball cuts that were great, that opened up space, how hard everyone's working to get back to their spot so we can set up whatever set we were in right there. So a lot of it is obviously how we scored and the set that we ran to get there. But we do like to take note into those archer lacrosse plays and what makes her identity and all those kind of little things that definitely don't show up in the stat sheet.
All right. I think it's just one more lacrosse one here for you. But I'm curious, the transition to the 52-second shot clock and obviously, like, trying to get subs and get into a settled possession and, like, get that rhythm going in such a short amount of time compared to, you know, the 80 seconds that you get in college. What's that transition been like? Has it been like, do you feel like possessions are super rushed because of it now?
I feel like, not that they're super rushed, you're just always in attack mode. You got to pick and choose your opportunities. And if your opportunity comes, hold on.
No worries.
I'm trying to flip it. There we go. Sorry, I was on my phone. you guys got a little picture of my feet.
Don't tell Arrestia.
Yeah, always, we're always in attack mode, you know, and you got to pick and choose your opportunities, and they're never going to be upset with you for being aggressive and trying to make a play, as long as it's kind of like that calculated risk, you know, especially with the 52 second, you never know if you're going to get a better shot. So kind of pushing the boundary and seeing where it takes you is a good opportunity, you know, whether it's 10 seconds in or it's the last 15 seconds, it's a lot faster and it's a lot less methodical and more kind of trusting your instincts.
Got it. Awesome answer.
Connor, last question for you. Have you ever shot a bow and arrow?
Yes, I have. It's
how'd it go?
I wasn't great at first, but then I started picking.
Are you good now? Kind of suggest.
I would not say I'm an expert now. I got better as the day went on, but I would by no means am I. Do I have Hawkeye precision?
Well, okay, so I'm glad that you set that up. Do you know which is your dominant eye?
Oh, hold on. I think for me, it is my right eye.
Okay, and this is a question that I don't have to ask very many lacrosse players, but you're one that I will. What is your dominant hand?
My right hand.
Yeah, so that's a good thing, right? Like, if you are right-eye dominant, and there's an actually, this is my favorite bar game or bar trick to do. Like, it's really easy to figure out. You make your hands in a shape like this, and you find something, like, on the wall, and then you look at it through your hands. You probably won't be able to do this if you're holding your phone, but you look at it through, and then you close one eye. And if you can see the object, then you close the other eye, and you can't see it, then that means that like the dominant eye is the one that can see it. And for shooting a gun or shooting a bow and arrow, being I don't even know what it's called, same side dominant is really advantageous. If you are cross dominant, it's like super disadvantageous. Like, it's very hard to be a world-class shooter of anything if you are cross dominant. And what I'm interested in is like, how similar is that to lacrosse? Now, granted, I don't think people are shooting one eye in really ever any circumstances. But, you know, I feel like if you're an archer, like we gotta get a day at the range and just see who the actual best bow and arrow marksman on the squad is. Like, I'm not taking Graham Hossack. If we're throwing axes, like, yeah, he's probably going to win, but he's probably not going to be the best bow and arrow shooter.
Man. Graham might surprise you. He's a cyborg when it comes to stuff like that.
I could see him being like a big like hunter, you know, like a Brendan Mundorf out in the woods with like, you know, that sort of bow hunting thing. So you're right. I shouldn't say that, especially when, you know, he could just show up at my doorstep and be all over.
I went golfing with a few of the guys when we were at training camp, just kind of get our minds off lacrosse for a little bit. And Brett Dobson was putting it in a coffee can out on the course. So I wouldn't put it past Dobson. He's got some skill, it seems like.
Wow. Interesting. Wow. That's good to know. Oh man. See, there's the tidbits, man. These are where we get the players right on the podcast.
Yeah.
Archers go to an archery range. If those are a thing, sounds like
it's a definitely
a social clip that would go and bring RJ out. Seems like something that would go viral.
That'd be funny.
Joe, I would love happen. To come
see
on, bro.
Our D guys get on the archery range. I want to see Neek. I got to see Dominique get out there. See what he's got. Yeah,
totally.
If this happens, will you promise to invite me?
I think he's gonna turn around and start shooting at all of us.
No doubt. Connor, you've been very gracious with your time. You were super responsive, quick on the uptake. Appreciate it. Really excited to have gotten a sneak peek at your feet. You know, definitely know what we're working with going forward. And looking forward to seeing you play at home with this weekend, man. It's gonna be exciting. What's it like? Are you jazzed? Like, I mean, what's it gonna be like
it's
to
awesome.
Go back there?
It's a really awesome environment, and I'm excited to kind of share it with a new group of guys. But it's gonna be bittersweet. You know, you obviously wish that you can go back and play with those Hopkins guys again, but it's a new chapter of my life, and I'm excited to experience what home was like in a different league.
You're going to you have like the key code access to like secret rooms that aren't available to the guys that are just like, you know what I mean? You're going to know like what the right order is at the cafeteria and like how to get, you know, water out of the vending machine without actually having to pay for it.
I told my family, I was like, if I score, should I try to cue the band? And my little brother's like, there's going to be no band there. Are you kidding me? And I was like, I don't know. They might show up.
All right. No doubt. No doubt. Connor, you're the man. Thank you for your time. Have a great night. Rest up. We look forward
appreciate
to seeing you on Saturday.
Talk to you guys Saturday.
What a beast.
What a pro. That's what I'm saying. Kid was born to be a professional lacrosse player. It's unbelievable. All right, fellas. We got a couple things to hit on as we head into week three. The Chaos. I think they're back. Joe, you can confirm. Are they back?
It appears that they're back. It appears that the boys are back. At least most of them. Yeah, most of them are back. Ian McKay, Josh Byrne, Dane Smith. I mean, those are the two guys, Josh Byrne and Dane Smith, offensively. Like, we kind of heard, like, at least Jamie Monroe is a big believer, and I love my chats with him. He's a big believer that you can kind of, like, bring in anybody with hands and play in that type of system and pump in a lot of goals. It's just, like, it's not the case. You know, you need a couple guys on each side who are going to run by people. And Terry, you're big into, like, those opposite poles, whether it's north and south or east and west. And, like, the way that Dane and Josh complement each other on the righty and lefty side is what they've been missing through 3 weeks.
No doubt. But also, I mean, like, how much have they been missing just the fact that they know that they can score a bunch of goals and win championships, right? Like, it's just not something that you can take for granted. I mean, you know, we can talk to Connor DeSimone, and he can be a great player in high school and college, and it's still, you can tell, like, you have to adjust. It's just the function of experience. And until you've done it, you haven't done it. And these guys have done it. So no matter how good the players that are taking their spots are, if they haven't won a PLL championship, the idea that you could expect them to perform at that level is insane. But my question for you, Dan Kaplan, is how long is it going to take them to assimilate? How long is it going to take them to adjust from what they just experienced with the Bandits and playing whatever it was, 23 games of NLL since their last PLL game?
And that's
if they don't play well this weekend, how big of a deal is it?
So I think this answer is kind of two-sided. The latter part of your question being the fatigue factor and, like, their bodies being worn down and beat up, like, that's the part I think that worries me the most. I feel like the chemistry and, like, their ability to know where each other are going to move, like, that'll come along pretty quickly. They've played together in the past. They just played together. Obviously, it's a different setting, but, like, the chemistry is still there. I'm much more worried about, like, their fatigue and their bodies and how healthy they are to come out and be as explosive as possible, you know? And I think at some point we're going to get to them, but I think a poster boy for this is Justin Anderson. Like, I think right now you're seeing him be super explosive right now, and he's able to, like, really burst and get out and, you know, really, like, score some unassisted goals and put pressure on defenses. And I think last year he was potentially, you know, the same player, just a little bit worn down after playing an entire college season, you know? So I think you may end up seeing kind of a similar thing with potentially the NLL guys after an entire NLL season. I'm just worried about their explosiveness levels, but we will find out. We will find out very soon too.
Joe, what do you think?
I think they've got to click soon. I don't know that it's, I've went back and forth thinking of this like four times as Dan was just speaking there. Like, is it a good thing that they're playing the Water Dogs, who are also struggling? But the Water Dogs also have their backs against the wall. So yeah. It's probably not a great first game back. And oh yeah, they're going against Dylan Ward, who is,
well,
like,
that was
going
to be my next question, is it an asset or a detriment or a liability that they're playing against a goalie who just beat them in the NLL championship? And also, I mean, you know what, I'm not going to, like, make a comment about Matt DeLuca's performance, but I'm saying, like, they got an MVP quality player back. Is it actually more valuable for the Water Dogs than it was, or than it could be for the Chaos? Like, I think that the point that I'm making is not that it's better for the Water Dogs or that they're getting more assets back. The point I'm making is that this notion that the Chaos were the only team that was going to benefit from the end of the NLL season was a little bit fraught. I mean, the Whipsnakes get Zeb Williams back. Like, Joe, what do you think? Like, I mean, Okay. So I had five questions. Dylan Ward was question number two. We can wrap that into question number three, which is, which game are you most interested in this weekend? And is it crazy to think that you're most interested in the two 0-3 teams playing each other?
Not crazy at all. No, I think that's definitely the most interesting game. Because of the two things that you mentioned, Dylan Ward is back and maybe more than any goalie in the world, Blaze is just Blaze, but Dylan Ward's ability to get in a shooter's head, like psychologically, like sometimes he's on that high arc, sometimes he's on a flat arc. Like you just don't know. His sweatpants are huge. Like there's just a lot going on in the crease when Dylan Ward is playing. He just gets in shooter's heads. So to see that and to see what Josh Byrne and Dane Smith are able to do again, like this offense, they need to produce in settled sets. Like CJ Costabile almost single-handedly lifted them to a victory in week two. They're getting the fast break goals. Like Blaze creates the transition better than any goalie in the league. So they'll get enough there. I think that like this offense in settled sets could produce enough to win and still not reach like the ceiling that we saw last September. So like when we talk about like, you know, how long is it going to take for them to gel? I don't think that they need to be at like their final form that we saw in DC last year to get a win this weekend. They just need to start getting wins.
Yeah, I agree. And to add to that point about Dylan Ward and just, you know, the transition obviously from box to field, like, are you worried about the, like, I mean, just that, like that transition from going from like sitting in a stance and like throwing your elbows up to like being in a full like field setting and like actually having to see and like step to the ball? And like, it's obviously just a little bit different. How much does that worry you?
So I can't be worried only because to me it doesn't make sense that he'd be good at both of them in the first place. So the fact that he is good at them both in the first place is so logic defying that there's no reason for me to assume that he's going to struggle with one versus the other just because of like the passage of six days and the habit of routine. Matt Vince, his opposite number in the NHL Championship Cup, played long pole, right, in order to get on the field for the Canadian national team. Like, the idea, like, being a box goalie and being an outdoor goalie is not the same position at all. Like, so, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to play well. I'm just saying if he doesn't play well, I don't know that the reason is going to be because he's been playing box for 7 months. I think it could very well just be they had a bad game, in the same way that he could play well for 4 weeks and have a bad game in week seven.
Okay, I'm with you. That makes sense. I like your logic there.
All right, so is Water Dogs Chaos the game that you're most interested and excited about this weekend? No? All right, Joe, go ahead.
Yeah, I lied. When you said it, I was thinking, I think it's my most, the game I'm most looking forward to tomorrow.
Okay.
Of the two, but the game of the weekend for me is Archers versus Atlas. Because those two teams are like, that could be a championship preview. Like legitimately, of all the games this weekend, there are a lot of teams that could be there in Philly in September. But I think that Archers Atlas game, it's also just going to be fun. Like those are the two best offenses at moving the ball, at hitting their step down shots. So from an aesthetic standpoint, it's just going to be the most enjoyable, I think.
Dan?
Yeah, no, I'm most interested.
You're sticking with it.
In Chaos Water Dogs. That's my most.
Yeah. You want to see the team get its first win.
Yeah, I'm fired up for that one. Plus, like if I had to pick a team, that's my team. It's the Water Dogs. So, and I'm gonna be there in person. So, like, lots of things going for me for that one. Yeah,
I can't explain why I'm so fascinated by Chrome, but Chrome Cannons is the game that I'm most intrigued by. Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's part of me that just thinks that this Chrome thing is not real yet. So I want, like, and I think that after 4 weeks, and obviously I picked them to win the championship, right? But it's kind of like against. Yeah, no, it's like, it's I don't know why I'm going to struggle so badly to explain this point, but my heart believes they're going to win the championship. My head is struggling to catch up. That is probably the best way to explain it. And if they go 4-0 and against a Cannons team that is pretty flawed, then I guess it's just going to become harder and harder for my head to doubt, right? And so that's the value of, you know, seeing them on Saturday and just, you know, continuing to stack evidence that they are as good as my heart thinks that they are.
It's interesting. If we had done this activity before the season, like if we could hit rewind, go back and bring the duplicate versions of ourselves from 4 weeks ago into this conversation and ask them which one they would be most excited for, we probably all would have picked Redwood Whipsnakes. And none of us in this moment did, which is pretty interesting.
I think I'm not picking it out of protest just because, like, I mean, it should be Redwoods Atlas at Homewood. Like, we've kind of, that's been what we've done in 2021 and 2019. So I understand that their Hopkins identity is not as strong as it was. But, like, you know, we don't need to see Notre Dame play at Hopkins. So that's where I'm just kind of like, yeah, get that game out of the way. We'll move on. But it does bring up the two kind of less specific to this weekend, less germane to any of the matchups or whatever. These are a little bit more evergreen questions I wanted to ask you guys. So this will be the third week in a row of Friday, Saturday format, you know, and specifically Friday night, Saturday night format. What do you guys think? Like, what do you like it? Is this the way to go? Joe, obviously you're going to have to toe the company line, so you can answer and we're just going to totally ignore it.
I'll just answer like from my own personal enjoyment. I love Friday, Saturday, personally, because that either gives me Sunday to maybe go outside for change or to rewatch the games, right? Even if, you know, I understand like the concept of a 7-day week. Like if we're playing Friday, Saturday every week, then the weeks will creep up in the same amount of time. But it just feels like there's a little more ramp time towards the next week and like a little time to digest when you play Friday, Saturday versus playing Saturday, Sunday. And like, you know, it's on to the next one so soon.
Dan, what do you think?
I'm selfishly wish it could be Friday, Sunday. Because I like that Sunday night teaser closer, the weekend conclusion into the week.
Yeah, nobody wants to tease Monday. That's that's horrible logic, but go on.
We're the only people probably on earth that could say that because we go from watching lacrosse into a job that's lacrosse, but
right.
I digress. Right. But I love the Friday night games. Like if there's one date that I could pick out of all of them, I would make it mandatory Friday night lights.
Friday night lights, baby. Yeah, so my point of view on this is Friday comes fast, man. I mean, I spent the entire day thinking that it was Wednesday. It's Thursday night at 10:39 p.m. Like, I am not ready for two games to be played. I mean, these games are going to be almost over. Well, that's not true. The second game, whatever. They're going to be pretty much over in 24 hours. Like, that's just, that's fast. And then conversely, like, last weekend, I was like, on Sunday, I was sitting there. It was like 3:00. I was like, man, I really wish there were a PLL game on right now. So, you know, it's always going to be a function wanting more. And I'm not complaining. I do like the format, but those are the two downsides, right? Friday comes fast and it's Sunday afternoon and, you know, the Formula One race is over and I just want to watch some live lacrosse. Homewood Field. It has sold out each of the two previous times that we go, or we have been here, and by we, I'm referring to the PLL, which I'm not a part of, but you get the point. How important is a good crowd this weekend?
So, I mean, I'll just kick it from a fan perspective to start, but I'll say it's huge. You know, you got to show out. It's one of the biggest, you know, especially as a Baltimore area kid, like we got to show out when it comes to town, you know, fill the stadium. Make sure they're coming back, make sure that they're, you know, getting all our money and ticket sales when they come to our area and keep them happy. It's kind of how I feel about it, honestly.
So my thing is that, I mean, I'm not going to turn this into a business and an economics podcast, but like I tweeted on Thursday that I am still trying to wrap my head around essentially how lucrative the next MLS TV contract is for the league and how nipping at the heels PLL is 3 weeks into its ESPN broadcast relationship relative to MLS, which has 25 years of equity buried into ESPN. It's incredible. So I don't know, like, again, contrarian going all the way back to the middle, or all the way back to the beginning, I'm like, I don't know if it matters. Like, just keep getting people watching these games and following on social media and developing fan avidity and buying merch. Like, we can have a big crowd. It's great. I'm sure it'll look great on TV. Baltimore fans are going to show up. Like, my point is that, you know, it's happened at Homewood and it has been consistent. But like, there's this weird kind of like confidence that I'm developing in the PLL as a business that I like, you know, I've never been a hater. I've never been like down on the PLL's prospects, but I am more bullish. And it's not just because of the movie. Like, the movie actually has very little to do with this. I would say it's much more about like the way the current like sports TV market is working. And it just feels like there's so many tailwinds behind this league right now that, you know, in year 1 and 3, big crowds at Homewood were a big deal. And I would say in year 4, it's like, yeah, you want to get a great crowd. You always want to get a great crowd. You don't want to take that for granted. But I don't think it's as like make or break as it previously was. I think it's kind of a bellwether for the position that this league is in, that it doesn't need a great crowd in Baltimore in order to, you know, be successful or define success.
That was a very well-rounded compliment.
Yeah.
Well,
I appreciate it. Appreciate the confidence.
Don't pass it along to your bosses, Joe. I don't want them to know that they're sending that I'm saying good things about them. That's just, it's totally going to destroy my credibility. Yeah, exactly. I want them to think that I'm criticizing them 100% of the time.
All right. Trying to offset anything Osello says on the Monday pod.
Exactly. I'm depositing goodwill in order for it to be extracted next week whenever that idiot writes whatever it is that he writes.
I said what he says on the podcast, because when he writes, he actually he's actually smart. I mean, he knows what he's talking about 100%, so I feel like he does that because you get different audiences on the different mediums, and he knows how to work them.
All right, parting shots. Joe Keegan, what are you looking forward to this weekend? Anything that we haven't touched on that we need to make sure that the audience is ready for when they turn on ESPN2, 6:30 on Friday night?
ESPN2 for Redwoods Whip Snakes. So you and I talked about this. The Redwoods last year, their offense, on average, throughout the course of the year, they're the most efficient settled offense. But their highs were high and their lows were low. And their highs always come. You asked, you know, who'd their highs come against. And it wasn't necessarily bad defenses. It was just the defenses that they hated, right? So they play well against chaos, like we saw last week. They play well, historically, against the Whipsnakes, right? They always rise to the occasion. This team, the passing and catching, like, wasn't great in weeks 1 and 2, no doubt. Like, there were on-field stuff that was not going at a pro level. But it mostly felt like the ability, or more like willingness, like they have the ability, they're pro players, the willingness to mesh with each other. So, like, finding that common enemy is going to be really telling about, like, the direction of this Redwoods team, because beating that chaos team that was not scoring in settled sets was what they needed to do, but it wasn't ultimately like super impressive. Like, it's, you don't get a trophy for winning that game.
Also, they only scored 2 goals in the first half. Like, you don't get a trophy for scoring 2 goals in the first half. Like, playing one good quarter and surviving against an incredibly limited team, I'm not going to throw you for a parade for that. I'm not going to move you up in the power rankings for that.
Are they the, like, surprise of the year so far? Their struggles, I should say, specifically, offensively?
Not for me, because I've never thought they were that good.
Fair.
Wow. Did you think they're not good offensively? Like their defense, everybody raises up the defense.
No, I mean, I think that like defensively, they're good enough to win a championship. Are they great every time out? No, they're good between the lines. When TD plays well, they're obviously facing off at a level that's good enough to win a championship. So no, I mean, I think offensively, like, and this has been like kind of an interesting thing for me to absorb and, you know, think on over the course of the last 2 weeks, because, you know, I put out a projection for the U.S. men's 2023 World Championships roster. It's 23-man roster. During tryouts, and I included Miles Jones in it. And the reason was because, you know, his omission in 2018 was probably the most eye-opening, right? His college head coach was the head coach of the national team. He obviously he'd won two national championships at Duke and had a, I think, four-time All-American career, and, you know, was a two-year pro at that point. And I think a lot of people assumed that this was, you know, kind of the trajectory that he was on. He didn't make it, and you know, there are potentially a lot of reasons why. But for me, what I saw from him last year was so similar to like peak Duke Miles Jones in terms of his dual ability to distribute and score goals, that I thought, like, you know, he had essentially like garnered a reputation for being a selfish player as a pro. Somebody who was trying to score goals as opposed to throw assists and contribute to team offense. I thought that was really eroded. I thought that he actually, you know, kind of earned back a lot of the credibility for being a well-rounded player that he had established when he was a college player, when he was like one of the most, you know, it was almost Schreiber-esque in terms of like, you look at his numbers, it was incredible how much he facilitated offense. You know, and it wasn't just throwing passes to Demar Klass, who was hammering 15-yard step downs. This was like, you know, dodging off the catch, dodging off, squaring up a long pole. He could do everything. And, you know, to me, like, I don't think he's going to supersede Tom Schreiber as, like, the primary initiator on the first line. But I do think that the idea of him being the primary initiator in the second line and, you know, taking 8 runs a half in the, you know, or maybe not 8, maybe like 5, 6, because obviously there's so few possessions in international lacrosse. But, like, you know, in the gold medal game against Canada, when, you know, who knows what they're going to do with the poll, right? Like Rylan Reese and Brody Merrill, and obviously they've got like a bunch of other options as well. But, you know, whoever the second poll is, right, presuming that that's who he matches up against, I'm like, this guy's going to be able to get a step. He's going to be able to throw a shoulder into somebody. He's going to be able to step down on the backside. Like he brings a variety of skills that are super valuable, and he's always going to be a unique matchup because he's 6'5", 240. But people like chirped me about it. It was definitely the inclusion that was the most frequently cited, like, wrong inclusion via text and Twitter. And I was like, I didn't know that thinking Miles Jones was good was like a unpopular opinion. I knew it was in like 2019, but I thought 21 did enough to like rectify that. But what I'm getting at is that, like, to me, who they were last year was just Miles Jones and Sergio Pergovic playing really, really well. Like, I haven't seen Ryder Garnsey and Matt Cavanaugh play at the level that they did when they were at Notre Dame and playing at their best. And without those two guys complimenting Rob Pinnell, you're going to push back on this?
No, I'm going to say Matt Cavanaugh's best probably came for the Denver Outlaws, but
I'll concede that. I mean, he scored a couple big goals wearing blue and gold, but understood. But my point is that, like, I mean, I don't know. We're getting close to the end of the podcast. I don't want to create a philosophical conversation of whether or not pro lacrosse is more midfield oriented or more attack oriented, but there is something about the way in which these 6-man units and specifically the 3-man units work together that just hasn't looked right to me ever, like ever, including when they lost in the championship in 2019. So as a result, like, again, like, I'm not disabusing the notion that the Redwoods can win a championship. I'm just saying, like, when it comes to what my expectations are, I was talking to people that follow this closely and know what they're talking about before the season started. And I was like, who's your pick? Who do you think's going to win? And, you know, one guy texted me a screenshot of the Redwoods roster, and he's like, there's a lot of talent on this team. It's hard to pick against. And I was like, I think they're going to finish fourth, which, you know, you protract that over the 30-team league, right? Like, that's not making the playoffs. So that's kind of my, I don't know, it's kind of my attitude. So sorry, Kaplan, I don't think it's the biggest surprise of the year. I think the biggest surprise of the year is the Chrome are as good as they were.
Totally. I agree with that. I was going to say, I did like a preseason predictions thing, and obviously didn't have a hot enough take. I said Chrome was not going to miss the playoffs again. Well, they're like right now they're on pace to make the champ series, which, by the way, I have here's what their roster would look like if you want to entertain a champ series roster, 12-man roster. Liam Murphy and I were going back and forth on this. They could trot out Wisnowskis, Heacock, Nick Dern, and then like between the arcs, Anderson, Kevin Rogers, John Rannigan, Tarasenko, Will Haas, and then depending on like what happens defensively, like Jesse Bernhardt, JT Giles Harris. Like that's a pretty athletic group. Not to delve into, we save the Sixers preview for January, but that's a good Sixers team.
Yeah, I would agree. Nobody on that team is going to struggle to make it to and from the offensive zone the way we saw a couple of the Canadians struggling with it in October at U.S. Lacrosse.
Clark Peterson was everywhere. But
Clark Peterson was, yeah. I mean, Clark Peterson and Jeremy Thompson were the two best players the entire weekend. It was unbelievable. No offense to all the Americans who played well. No offense to all the women who played well. Those two guys, like the way that their game was better in that format than it was at any point in the last however long was incredible. Coach Cap, what do you got for this weekend? What did we not hit on that our listeners should be ready for?
Well, as much as I want to keep this rolling, I have a question still about the Redwoods, so we're not going too far. How much does Glazer being injured hurt the defense?
Have they lost a game because of their defense?
I wouldn't say so, but
what would they lose week one against Atlas because of defense or faceoffs?
Say that again. Sorry, Joe.
Week one against Atlas, would you say that the loss was on defense or at the stripe?
I think it was equally distributed among all three facets of the game. But if you were going to have to pick one, I would say it was more face-off oriented. I mean, they put up 11 goals against the Atlas. Like, that's not necessarily a bad performance, particularly when they followed that up with a 3-goal performance against Chrome. But, you know, at the same time, like, I do think that was a little bit artificially inflated by virtue of game flow. So I don't think that was a normal 11 goals.
All right. Well, I'll transition us then, and I will give you my actual what to watch for. And that is a combination, and I'm going to go with my game of the weekend here, my Water Dogs game. But I'm feeling a Courier breakout performance game. Friday night, under the lights, the team needs a win. He's kind of been pushed around to a couple different roles so far this season, coming into it with his head right in a good role, back on the wings, getting gritty off those, pushing transition. I'm calling it now, here with you guys, a big game from Courier and leading them to a Water Dogs win. Boom.
Love it. Love it. Fellas, this is a great podcast. I feel good about it. Connor DeSimone, thank you very much for your time and candor talking about what it's going to be like going back to Homewood Field. Joe Keegan, as always, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Dan Kaplan, you're the man. Listeners, thank you very much for checking this out. If you like what you heard, leave a rating and review. Tell a friend. We'll be back next week with more PLL Happy Hour podcasts.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.